Eddie, the Junior Year. Chapter 6. The Big Spring Season, Part 1. The week after tryouts, the team has only 3 days to get ready for the first meet of the season. Mr. Fraser, however, is not worried. Most of the team members were running with the indoor track team and are more ready than ever for the spring season. The team is the strongest that it has ever been. There is no question of whether Northside will win the upcoming meet against Centerville High School. The question is whether they can take first, second, and third place in every event. The sprinters are ready. Eddie and Kathy will not be beaten in the 100-yard dash. Mark and Paula will take the 220-yard dash. Mark will put McCutcheon's brain through a blender sometime during the meet, immobilizing Centerville's best sprinter. No one will come close to Braden or Erica in the 440-yard dash. Mr. Zunde is planning on having Eddie throw the discus, just to make a point. Word travels fast among teams, so a good showing in the first meet is imperative. Mr. Zunde has his own form of psychological warfare, and ushering in the season by having an athlete throw the discus almost 200 feet is definitely in his arsenal. The Centerville coach, Mr. Ruff, will likely find out that Mr. Fraser really did make a trip to Nigeria to pick up Akinmola. Mr. Ruff will also get to see Paula's sister, Amber Amy, perform for the first time. Mr. Fraser is reported to have rescued Amber from the Amazon jungle last summer, just as he promised. Paula is very grateful. She just could not bear the thought of her sister, who was all by herself in the Amazon, dodging spears and fighting off snakes and piranha. Once Mr. Ruff gets the scoop on Mr. Fraser's activities, Mr. Parker, the Henderson coach, will certainly know by the next day. Mr. Ruff and Mr. Parker are sure to shift the rumor mill into high gear. Wednesday morning before the meet brings an interesting development. By now, everyone knows that, when the principal, Mr. Crum, plans on interfering with athletics, he calculates every move with great precision. And so goes the script. Wednesday, after the usual morning announcements, the secretary announces over the loudspeaker, "Will Axel Braden and Mark Svoboda please report to the principal's office immediately?" Eddie tells Mark and Braden, "I guess Mr. Crum hit a dead end with me and Kathy. It looks like it's your turn. Good luck, bro." Mark and Braden walk out and pass by the seats that are usually occupied by Jimmy O'Brien and Chucky. Those seats have been vacant for a few days. Mark and Braden arrive in the school lobby. They are greeted outside the administration office by Mr. Zunde and Mr. Fraser, who heard the announcement and invited themselves to the meeting. Hoping for an answer, Braden asks, "What did we do now?" Mr. Zunde replies, "Your guess is as good as mine. But it looks to me like he's calling the train wreck crew into his office." Mark adds, "O'Brien hasn't been to school since they took him away." Braden mentions, "Neither has Chucky." Mr. Zunde comments, "Well, that's certainly good news for the track team." The coaches walk into the administration area, and Mr. Zunde asks Mrs. Marlowe, the secretary, "What does Mr. Crum want this time?" Mrs. Marlowe replies, "I'm not exactly sure, but Mr. O'Brien is in his office right now." Mr. Fraser tells Mr. Zunde, "It looks like you hit the nail on the head with that one. It's probably about the collision on the track." Mr. Zunde jokingly tells Mr. Fraser, "This must be about something really serious. Perhaps Mr. O'Brien saw Mark and Braden chewing gum in class. Or it could be that they've used the restroom without permission." Mrs. Marlowe, finally understanding the dynamics between Mr. Crum and Mr. Zunde, laughs at Mr. Zunde's comment. Mrs. Marlowe phones Mr. Crum and lets him know that Axel Braden and Mark Svoboda have arrived. Mrs. Marlowe tells the group that they may go into Mr. Crum's office. Mr. Crum is still in his cast with a broken leg that he incurred when he ran into the discus, so he is still not moving very well. Mr. Zunde and Mr. Fraser lead the way, and see Mr. O'Brien sitting in a chair, with his son Jimmy next to him. Jimmy is wearing a cervical collar due to his sprained neck. Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser, with their arms crossed, stand in their usual place near the bookshelf. Today, Mr. Crumb does not question Mr. Zunday or Mr. Fraser's presence. Mark and Braden stand in front of the door with a stance that would give someone the impression that they are the school's bouncers. Everyone now knows exactly what this meeting is about. Mr. Crumb begins the meeting by announcing, "It has come to my attention that there has been another so-called accident on the track last week. Mr. O'Brien would like to give all of you an update on Jimmy's condition. He would like Mr. Svoboda and Mr. Braden to hear this information firsthand." Turning to Mark and Braden, Mr. Crumb tells them, "That's why you two guys are here." Braden tells Mr. Crumb, "Well, I know we're not here to see a new desk, 'cause you ain't got one yet. It looks like the one that Eddie's father busted up is still here, and it's still broken." Mr. Crumb slams a folder onto his desk, wanting to, but not wanting to, engage Braden. Mr. O'Brien opens by telling everyone present, "Jimmy suffered a very bad concussion on the track last week. He also has 3 broken ribs and a badly sprained neck. As of today, he still cannot think properly. They did multiple x-rays of his brain and said that they couldn't see anything." Mr. Zunday asks, "So, they said they couldn't see anything in there?" Mr. O'Brien replies, "Exactly." Mr. Zunday comments, "That doesn't surprise me." Mr. O'Brien, totally missing Mr. Zunday's innuendo, continues to explain, "The doctors also say that Jimmy has severe internal contusions." Mark asks, "What's that?" Mr. O'Brien explains, "He has bruising inside his body." Braden mentions, "Well, he shouldn't have had his ass on the track." Mr. Crumb exclaims, "That is not the issue, Mr. Braden. And please watch your language." Mr. Fraser tells Mr. Crumb, "Excuse me, sir, but Braden has a valid point." Mr. Crumb brazenly asks, "And exactly what is his point, Mr. Fraser?" Mr. Fraser tells Mr. Crumb, "Jimmy was cut from the team before we went out to the track on the first day of tryouts. I told him he was cut, and that he should head to the locker room. I'm waiting for anyone's explanation of why he was on the track at all after I cut him. And don't tell me he didn't know that he was cut. Everyone trying out for the team heard me tell him that he was cut, and they watched him as he headed to the lockers." Mr. Crumb asks Mr. Fraser, "Why did you cut him before tryouts began?" Mr. Zunday steps in and answers, "Jimmy is a danger to himself and everyone else on the track. That's why. It's my decision, and I am standing by it." Mr. O'Brien lectures Mr. Zunday, telling him, "I don't think that's very fair." "Do you?" Mr. Zunday replies, "Judge for yourself. The evidence for my decision is sitting right next to you." Mr. O'Brien, belaboring the issue, remarks, "Well, Jimmy still should have been given a chance." Mr. Zunday, standing his ground, replies, "No, he shouldn't have. Maybe he should try out for football instead. Perhaps they could use Jimmy for the football." Mr. O'Brien is not exactly Mr. Zunday's favorite teacher, and Mr. Zunday has no problem letting it be known. Mr. Fraser interrupts and exclaims, "Will somebody please tell me why Jimmy was on the track?" Mr. Crumb asks Jimmy, "Jimmy, did you know that you were cut?" Jimmy reluctantly replies, "Well, yeah." Mr. Fraser exclaims with unmistakable anger, "Then, please tell me why you were out on the track." Jimmy starts sobbing and doesn't answer. Mr. Crumb mentions, "Well, that is not the main issue right now." Standing his ground, Mr. Fraser exclaims, "Yes, it is. That's the only issue right now. I want to know why Jimmy was on that track." Getting nowhere with Jimmy, Mr. Fraser asks Mr. O'Brien, "Did you know that Jimmy was cut from the team?" Mr. O'Brien bluntly replies, "Yes, I did. But I didn't think it was fair." Mr. Fraser, in an interrogating tone of voice, asks Mr. O'Brien, "Then, sir, do you know why Jimmy was on the track? Mr. Fraser is now conducting his own investigation. Apparently, someone is hiding something from Mr. Fraser, and he is going to get to the bottom of it, one way or another. Mr. Fraser will not let his question go unanswered. Mark looks at Braden, whispering to him, "So, this is what Eddie and Kathy are talking about." Braden whispers back, "Yeah. And there's some really good shit that's going to come down right now." Mark whispers to Braden, "Yeah, I can see that. And it's definitely getting better." Braden replies, "And just look at him. Jimmy Acrying is his new name." Mark has never had the pleasure of being present during one of Mr. Crumb's witch hunts. Mr. Brian confesses, telling everyone, "I told Jimmy to go back to tryouts and try again." The room falls uncomfortably silent as Mr. Fraser angrily stares right through Mr. O'Brien. Mr. Zunday breaks the silence, saying, "When someone is cut from a team, they do not have the option of coming back the next day to try out again. This is your own fault, Mr. O'Brien. The accident that occurred on the track is completely your own fault." Mr. O'Brien, giving Mr. Zunday some backtalk, replies, "I don't really think so." Mr. Zunday tells Mr. O'Brien, "I don't care what you think. What you think doesn't matter. In fact, considering the evidence, I question whether you even have the ability to think at all. Look to your left at your son. That is the result of you overriding the coach's decision. You had absolutely no authority to do that." Mr. Zunday might have well exclaimed checkmate after his last remark. But he doesn't have to. Even Mr. Crumb doesn't have a leg to stand on. Mr. Zunday continues, "And even if Jimmy made the team, what he did on the track is completely unacceptable. These two guys, more than 200 pounds apiece, were running at 20 miles per hour. Your 100-pound son, Jimmy, stepped onto the track right in front of them when he wasn't supposed to. That's about 450 pounds at 20 miles per hour coming straight on at him. What did you expect to happen?" Mr. O'Brien has no answer. Mr. Zunday tells Mr. O'Brien, "Perhaps you should ask Miss Amherst, the physics teacher. She'll be glad to explain transfer of momentum to you." Mr. Zunday then lectures Mr. O'Brien, telling him, "Why don't you attend the meet on Thursday and observe for yourself the level of proficiency that is required to make the team? Then, perhaps, you will finally understand why Jimmy is totally unqualified to run track at this school." Mr. O'Brien sarcastically replies, "I might just do that." Whether Mr. O'Brien will attend or not is anyone's guess. Mr. Zunday then tells Mr. O'Brien, "Just be sure to stay out of the red zone. Mr. Crumb can explain to you all about the red zone." Mr. Zunday has apparently had enough of dealing with this type of nonsense over the last 2 weeks. Mr. Crumb is at a complete loss for words. Mr. Fraser hijacked his meeting, and Mr. Zunday put an end to it. Mr. Crumb announces, "I called this meeting just so Mark and Axel have an update on Jimmy's condition." Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday do not believe that for a nanosecond. Mr. Crumb was looking for someone to incriminate, but since he doesn't want to incriminate Mr. O'Brien, he abruptly changes course. He was headed down a dead-end street, and he knows it. Mr. Crumb asks, "Does anyone else have anything to say?" Braden replies, "Just keep his ass off the track and everything will be just fine." Mr. Crumb does not even respond to Braden's comment. Responding to Braden would also be a dead-end street at this point. Mr. Crumb tells everyone that they are dismissed. Mr. Fraser, Mr. Zunday, Mark, and Braden all walk out together. In the lobby, Mr. Zunday mentions to everyone, "I don't know where Mr. Crumb thought he was going with that. He certainly didn't call that meeting to give you guys an update on Jimmy's condition." Mr. Fraser agrees, stating, "The first meet is tomorrow. He was probably trying to keep these guys out of the meet." Mr. Zunday replies, "Exactly." Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser have Mr. Crumb figured out. Mark and Braden head back to class, learning firsthand what happens in Mr. Crumb's office. As they are walking back to class, Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday overhear Braden saying to Mark, "It looks to me like Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday gave the principal a first class as kicking in there." Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser look at each other and laugh, glad to see that Mark and Braden got some amusement today. Mark and Braden get back to class and take their seat. Shortly after, Jimmy O'Brien walks into class and takes his seat. Miss Starr, seeing Jimmy in a neck brace, asks, "Jimmy, were you in an accident?" Jimmy, pointing in the direction of Mark and Braden, replies, "They ran over me on the track." Braden cannot help but comment, "That's because your scrawny little ass shouldn't have been on the track in the first place." The class starts laughing at O'Brien, who should not have blamed someone else for his own mistake. If he had simply replied yes, he might have escaped the humiliation that is now waiting for him around the corner. Jimmy O'Brien has now stirred up everyone's interest in what happened on the track. By lunch, the whole school will have heard the story. The next day, the team is ready for the big event. After the final bell rings, the team heads to the locker room, ready to open the spring track season. Wendy gets busy driving the Cushman back and forth, delivering the equipment to the track. The last thing to be delivered to the track is the shot put. Wendy hasn't yet delivered the shot put, since Bobby B. and Erica are just entering the auxiliary gym for a short team meeting. Wendy will wait until the meeting is over before the shot put is transported to the track. Mr. Fraser walks into the gym and is in a very good mood today. Mr. Fraser tells everyone, "Okay, this is it. It's been a rough week, but we are ready. Centerville is ready too. For you freshmen, Centerville is one of our team's rivals. Henderson is the other. Neither of them like us, and that's because we beat them every year. But, this year, we're not only going to beat them. We have the potential to shut them out. So, don't let your guard down. Just get out there and run your best." Mr. Fraser goes over some last-minute details and tells the team to head out to the track. Most of the team members walk out to the track together. From a distance, they see that the stands are full, which is good news for the team. When the fans are on your side, you are destined to perform better. On the opposite end of the spectrum, the Centerville team gets a little worried seeing so many Northside fans in the stands. Bobby B. and Erica procure the shot put and get in the Cushman. More specifically, Bobby B. gets in the Cushman and Erica gets on his lap. Wendy drives them to the track, along with the shot put in the rear bed. The shot put still gets its special treatment, but no one cares. As long as Bobby B. is number one in the state, Mr. Fraser does not care how the shot put gets transported to the track. The Centerville team is already on the track doing some last-minute warm-up activities. Mark sees McCutcheon and McCutcheon, Jr. McCutcheon's younger brother, Jeff, is a distance guy. According to Mark, he's about as gullible as McCutcheon, and not very good. But he's only a freshman. John McNamara, the Centerville miler, is spotted by Mitchell. McCutcheon and McNamara are Centerville's biggest threat today. The question of the day is whether Amber, Amy, or Jeff Davis can beat McNamara. The other question is which relay team McCutcheon is assigned to. Mr. Zunday walks over from the field event area and tells Mr. Fraser, "Mr. O'Brien and Mr. Crumb are both in the bleachers. Jimmy is sitting with them." Mr. Fraser replies, "I wonder what their sudden interest in track is all about." Mr. Zunday tells Mr. Fraser, "Spread the word to the team. Everyone will perform better if they know they are being watched by those two clowns." The call is made for the hurdles, signifying the beginning of the meet. Mr. Zunday then heads back to the field area. The hurdlers are set and ready to run, but Eddie, Kathy, and Hoffa pay no attention. The gun goes off, and the sound of spikes grinding into gravel announces the beginning of the track meet and the opening of the spring track season. The hurdlers are gone. Now it's down to the race against the two fastest runners in the state. Mark reminds Eddie to tell McCutcheon that Mark's family will be moving to the Centerville district next year. Mark will support the story later. The call is made for the 100-yard dash, and Eddie, Kathy, and Hoffa walk to the starting line. McCutcheon also walks to the starting line, joined by a few of his buddies from his 4x440 relay team. Kathy waves to the crowd and receives cheers in return. It doesn't take long for the cheering to morph into the Amazon cheer. Mr. Ruff is certainly not happy to hear the word Amazon again. At the blocks, Eddie tells McCutcheon, "We're losing Mark next year. His parents are moving to your district." McCutcheon, who is startled by the news, asks, "Really? Are you serious?" Eddie replies, "Yeah. Next year, he'll be standing there, right next to you, and I'll be running against him." McCutcheon does not like Mark in the least. Mark and McCutcheon have been rivals ever since they both began running track. McCutcheon is clearly not happy about Eddie's news. The starter is amused at the pre-race discussion. He sees this every year and looks forward to hearing what new and interesting stories Northside comes up with. The starter announces, "On your marks," catching McCutcheon a little off guard. The starter announces, "Set." The gun goes off, and the runners are all out of the blocks. Kathy lets out a loud primal scream, startling McCutcheon and his teammates. At 50 yards, Eddie and Kathy have a decent lead, with Hoffa in third place. McCutcheon, in fourth place, has diminishing hopes of catching Hoffa. As they approach the finish line, Eddie crosses first, followed by Kathy. Hoffa finishes third, with the team sweeping the event. Eddie, Kathy, Hoffa, and Mr. Fraser exchange high fives and walk back to the bench. On the way to the bench, Mr. Fraser tells Eddie and Kathy, "Now would be a good time to get your discus throws in. Just make sure you're fully recovered from the race." Mr. Fraser tells Kathy, "And by the way, Mr. Crum is sitting in the bleachers. See if you can throw the discus more than 20 feet and surprise him." Kathy replies, "Oh, he is he? I'm going to show that little twit what Amazon means." After all the stress Mr. Crum has dished out to Kathy, she has zero tolerance for him and will rip him into shreds if need be. Kathy and Eddie sit on the bench for a few minutes before they go and throw the discus. Mr. Fraser informs the team, "So far, it's a shutout. Good work. Good work." Eddie and Kathy head over to the field area and check in with the head field judge. The field judge places them in the rotation and they wait their turn. Eddie walks over to the shot put pad and asks Bobby B, "How are you doing?" Bobby B replies, "I won." After one throw, the shot doc has taken first place in the event. No one is likely to even come close to his throw. Eddie asks, "How about everyone else?" Bobby B replies, "So far, we're in the lead. They are not very good this year. We almost have it wrapped up." Bobby B then whispers to Eddie, "I threw the shot put farther than one of their javelin guys threw the javelin." Eddie laughs and replies, "Seriously, bro. That's actually kind of funny." Eddie walks over toward the discus pad and is up next. Kathy walks with him and will be up right after him. Kathy tells Eddie, "Now is your big moment. You've been waiting for this." Eddie takes the discus and gets on the pad. Eddie tells the head field judge at the pad, "You might want to tell the field judges out there to move back." The head field judge motions to the other field judges to move back. Eddie goes into the wind-up, into the spin, and releases the discus. The discus soars over the heads of the field judges. They find the mark and make the measurement. The officials record 193 feet, 7 inches. The head field judge tells the other field judges to take another measurement. The head field judge goes out to verify the throw himself and finds the original measurement is correct. The Centerville discus men look at Eddie as if he is from a different planet. Eddie just threw the discus farther than the winning throw at state last year. Now, it's Kathy's turn. Eddie tells Kathy, all those people on the bleachers are on your side, well, except for Crum and O'Brien. The 6-foot-tall, 175-pound discus girl takes the discus and walks toward the discus pad. Seeing Kathy getting ready to throw, the crowd stands and goes wild. Kathy waves to the crowd and smiles as she walks onto the discus pad. The Amazon cheer begins, and Kathy goes into the wind-up. Kathy goes into the spin and, as she releases the discus, lets out a primal scream that is so loud that it can be heard over all the cheering. The crowd suddenly goes silent when they see where Kathy's throw lands. The crowd claps, being amazed at what they just witnessed. Eddie gives Kathy a hug as they wait for the measurement. Kathy is just happy to throw the discus. To her it's fun, and that's what it's all about. Eddie tells Kathy, Springer said that Mr. Crum was watching you. Kathy replies, why? Girls can only throw the discus 20 feet. The measurement comes in at 155 feet, 9 inches, just slightly over the 20 feet Mr. Crum expected. That would make Kathy's throw the second best of the afternoon. Springer is currently in third place, with a throw of 151 feet, 3 inches. With Kathy surpassing his throw, Springer will have to step up his game. After a few more events, the call is made for the 1-mile run. On the way to the starting line, Barbara tells the runners, remember, we're running for time today, not strategy. Everyone needs to get a good run under their belt today and qualify for state. She explains that, if they get a good run and qualify for the state invitational meet, they will have more flexibility to win by strategy later in the season. Akinmola asks, why doesn't everyone just always run their fastest? Mitchell responds, because sometimes it's hot outside. Akinmola asks, why does that matter? Mitchell answers, in some meets, it's nice to run only as fast as you need to win. Akinmola asks, why is that? Barbara explains, if you're always running your fastest in competition, you run a greater risk of injury. And, not to mention, you have more than one event to run in each meet. You don't need to burn yourself out in one event if you can help it. Akinmola asks lots of questions. But, after all, Akinmola is new to the country and wants to conform. At the starting line, Mr. Fraser also reminds them, I want your best time today. I don't want anyone slacking off. Mr. Ruff is also at the starting line with his team. Mr. Ruff looks over the north side runners, trying to estimate their speed by their physical appearance. He notices that Akinmola and Amber are new to the team. Amber ran on the indoor team, but Mr. Ruff did not take notice. Mr. Ruff clearly remembers that Mr. Fraser made mention of a trip to Africa to pick up a distance runner. Seeing Akinmola, it's now time for Mr. Ruff to investigate. Mr. Ruff comments to Mr. Fraser, I see you have some new talent this spring. Mr. Fraser boasts, yeah. The girl is from the Amazon. She's Paula's sister. And the tall guy is Akinmola. He's from Nigeria. I told you about him during the state meet. We picked him up 2 weeks ago. Mr. Ruff replies, oh, really? Are they fast? Mr. Fraser replies, we'll see in a moment. This is their first spring season. I hope I got what I paid for. Mr. Ruff sincerely believes that Mr. Fraser is up to something, but he does not know exactly what. After the runners are positioned, the starter announces, set. The runners get set, and the gun is fired. During the first 100 yards, everyone contends for a position where they feel comfortable. At 100 yards, Mitchell is in the lead, with Akinmola right behind him. Amber and Davis are right behind Akinmola. Mr. Fraser tells Barbara, "This is going to be interesting. This is Akinmola's first race in competition." Barbara informs Mr. Fraser, "He's got more under the hood than he's showing." Mr. Fraser asks, "Oh yeah. What have you seen?" Barbara tells Mr. Fraser, "He's tried the high jump a few times, just for fun. He's every bit as good as Decker. We need to look at that a little more later." Mr. Fraser replies, "Decker is our number one guy in the high jump. He rarely, if ever, loses." After the first lap, Mitchell and Akinmola are still leading. Mitchell would prefer to be in second place, and Akinmola in first place. Mitchell and Akinmola are pushing each other to their limit. Neither Mitchell nor Akinmola wants to lose this race. Amber is in third place, and Davis in fourth place. There are Centerville runners in the race, but they are too far behind to matter. McCutcheon, Jr. is among them. Halfway through the race, Mr. Ruff is getting quite angry. Mr. Ruff understands and accepts that Mitchell took the gold medal in the mile over the winter. What is angering Mr. Ruff is that Akinmola is right behind Mitchell. Mitchell's and Akinmola's half-mile split times were on par with Mitchell's gold medal performance. And, if that is not enough, Amber is in third place, not far behind the leaders. Mr. Ruff walks over to Mr. Fraser and asks, "Where is your new guy from again?" Mr. Fraser replies, "I told you. Nigeria." Stating the obvious, Mr. Fraser mentions, "He's looking really good for a sophomore." Learning that Akinmola is a sophomore is not exactly what Mr. Ruff wanted to hear. That means there will be two more years of contending with Akinmola after this season. During the last lap of the race, Mitchell and Akinmola battle it out for first place. Amber is battling it out with Davis for third place. All eyes are on Mitchell and Akinmola as they rapidly approach the finish line. Mitchell sprints to the end and wins the race. Akinmola finishes in second place, not far behind the state's best miler. Amber beats out Davis for third place by a few yards. Barbara and Mr. Fraser congratulate the distance stars on a great run. Mr. Fraser assures Mitchell and Akinmola that their times have qualified them both for the state invitational meet. Mr. Fraser, Barbara, and their distance team celebrate as they head back to the bench, while the Centerville team finally crosses the finish line. Sweeping another event, Northside is still on track to shut out Centerville, and Centerville's coach, Mr. Ruff, knows it. Soon after the mile, the call is made for the 440-yard dash. Braden, Erica, and Johnson will be running this race today. Mr. Fraser assigned Johnson to the 440-yard dash for this meet. On the way to the starting line, Mr. Fraser, not wanting to be left out of the psychological warfare, tells Braden, "Remember, they've approved your bonus if you break 50 seconds. Mr. Fraser said this for the benefit of McCutcheon, who just passed by. Anything heard by McCutcheon quickly makes its way back to his coach. At the starting line, Braden is exclaiming, "We're kicking ass. We're taking it all today. Ain't no one stopping us." Braden jogs up to the starting line ready to go. Braden repeatedly points to his chest and exclaims, "I'm the chief ass kicker around here. Ain't no one gonna beat me. Let's get this ass kicking started and over with so we can move on to the next one." One of the Centerville runners mentions to another, "Can't he just shut up?" Another Centerville runner explains, "He does this every meet, and he always wins." As if Braden's pre-race rants are not enough, the crowd, seeing Erica at the starting line, begins the Amazon chant. Erica waves to the crowd, and the cheering gets louder. Once the runners are ready, the starter tells the runners, "On your marks." Braden exclaims, "Here we go. The ass kicking of the century is about to begin." The starter announces, "Set." The gun goes off, and the runners are out of the blocks. In no time, Braden is in first place. Johnson and Erica are in second and third place respectively. Erika is not about to take fourth place. Fourth place counts for nothing, and she wants to make a difference. Halfway through the race, Braden is in the lead, Johnson is in second place, and Erika still in third place. Unfortunately, halfway through the race, most of the Centerville runners are too far behind to catch up. Their best runner in the race is closely following Erika, but is having difficulty catching her. As they approach the finish line, Braden is easily on track to break 50 seconds. At the finish line, Braden crosses first, followed by Johnson. Erika, in third place, battles it out with the Centerville runner, who is in fourth place. Erika manages to hold on and takes third place. All three Northside runners delivered respectable times, and Mr. Fraser congratulates them on a fine run. With the field events over, and the 4x400 relay approaching, Mr. Fraser asks Mr. Zunde and Decker to take Akinmola over to the high jump to see what he can do. They head over, hoping that Akinmola can add to the talent in that area. Akinmola is happy to give it a try and tells them that he has high jumped a few times before. Decker shows Akinmola the technique for the high jump. They start out with the bar at a medium height. Akinmola gives it a try and successfully makes the jump. They raise the bar and Decker jumps again. Akinmola takes a turn and successfully makes the jump. The process of raising the bar and jumping continues as the spectators watch the unofficial high jump competition. The bar is finally raised to Decker's winning jump, which Akinmola is easily able to do. Mr. Zunde is satisfied for now and will explore Akinmola's abilities in the high jump during the next practice. The call is made for the final event of the day. Eddie, Kathy, Mark and Paula head over to the starting line to run the 4x400 relay. Seeing Kathy and Paula being part of the final event, the crowd begins the Amazon chant. No one dares to leave the meet early. So far, the meet has been a shutout, and the final event is expected to seal the unprecedented victory. Mr. Ruff, the Centerville coach, already knows he's going to lose this race. He has already lost the meet. His anger is being displayed from every orifice and appendage of his body. At the starting line, McCutcheon mentions to Mark, "Hey, I heard you moving to my district." Mark replies, "Who told you that?" Pointing to Eddie, McCutcheon replies, "He did." Mark whispers to McCutcheon, "My parents weren't really moving. That's just what everyone thinks. Your school superintendent over there in Centerville was going to pay me more to run for your team, but Northside matched the offer. And I'll get a big bonus if I can consistently break 50 in the 440. They gave Braden the same deal, and look what he's doing this year." McCutcheon replies, "You can't be serious." Mark frankly tells McCutcheon, "How much do you think Eddie gets paid for throwing the discus almost 200 feet? And look at Bobby B, our shot put guy. Does he even look like he's in high school? Throwing the shot put is how he makes his college tuition money. You need to wake up." Having McCutcheon's full attention, Mark adds, "Hey, it's not only us. The football players get a $100 bonus to take someone out for the rest of the game. And they get $200 to take out the quarterback." McCutcheon tells Mark, "You can't be real." Mark replies, "Well, you do have a point. Those figures are for the first half of the game. During the second half, they'll only get half as much." McCutcheon asks, "What about baseball?" Mark replies, "They get nothing. No one cares about baseball around here. And just look. Our baseball team kind of sucks." To McCutcheon, Mark sounds very convincing. McCutcheon has heard the rumor about Bobby B and the tuition money before. Hearing it twice must, therefore, make it true. McCutcheon thinks about all of what Mark said for a moment and comes to the conclusion that Mark does have a point. McCutcheon is now ticked off that he runs for free and that the deck is stacked against him. And the icing on the cake is that McCutcheon heard Mr. Fraser telling Braden, right before the 440-yard dash, remember, they've approved your bonus if you break 50 seconds. The starter was delaying the start of the race because he was amused with listening to Mark messing with McCutcheon's mind. He finally tells the runners to get ready. The starter tells the runners, on your marks. The starter announces, set. The gun goes off, and the runners are out of the blocks. Mark is out of the blocks first, and takes an early lead. Mark's run clearly gives everyone the impression that he is running for more than just the win. Mark approaches the transition zone, and is in first place by a significant margin. Mark hands off the baton to Paula, who takes off running like she is running for gold in the state invitational meet. Paula maintains the lead well into her leg. Kathy watches as Paula makes her way around the track. Kathy is remembering when she watched Paula hand off to Erica over the indoor season, when she didn't even have enough energy to stand and cheer. But that is all behind Kathy now, and she steps onto the track and waits as Paula comes around the curve. Paula approaches the transition zone and hands off to Kathy. Kathy lets out her primal scream when she takes off, catching everyone's attention. The Amazon chant shifts into high gear as the discus girl makes her way around the track. Even Mr. Fraser, for the first time, joins in with the Amazon chant. Kathy widens the lead, leaving Eddie little work to do during his leg. Eddie and McCutcheon enter the track, waiting for their batons. McCutcheon, however, will have to wait 40 seconds longer than Eddie to receive his baton. While they are in the transition zone, Eddie tells McCutcheon, hey, your team is headed to the bus. You'd better run and catch up with them. They might leave without you. McCutcheon doesn't even reply to Eddie's remark. Mark, who overheard Eddie's comment to McCutcheon along with Paula, tells her, wow. That was a really good one. Kathy hands off to Eddie, who intends to break 50 seconds during his leg. Kathy drops to the ground to catch her breath, as she turns her head watching as Eddie runs his leg. When Eddie is more than halfway around the track, McCutcheon finally receives his baton. Even though Centerville has no chance of winning, Eddie does not relent. He is not running only to win. The relay team has already done that. Eddie, like everyone else on the 4x440 relay team, is running for a ticket to the state invitational meet. Eddie approaches the finish line, where Kathy and the relay team's ticket to the state invitational meet are waiting for him. Mr. Fraser gives every team member he sees a high five. The 4x440 relay team has won the event, and their time will get them an invitation to the state invitational meet. And the icing on the cake is that Northside has shut out Centerville. The team jogs back to the bench to join in with the victory celebration that is going on there. Kathy and Paula wave to the crowd as they pass by. Many of the spectators come down from the bleachers to join in with the team celebration. While McCutcheon is still on the track finishing his lap, Mr. Ruff is having a discussion with one of the timekeepers. Mr. Fraser sees the conversation and suspects it is about the new rumors that have been started today. The timekeeper listens to Mr. Ruff's complaint, pretending to act serious. The timekeeper, however, knows that the rumors are false and are nothing more than a creative mode of distraction. The timekeeper is amused that Mr. Ruff is actually taking the rumors so seriously. Mr. Ruff, who has been hammered by Northside for the last 2 years, is understandably distressed. A few of the parents who were watching the meet bring their younger daughters down to the team's bench so they can meet the discus girl. The younger girls are so happy to meet Kathy. They are quite surprised to see that she is 6 feet tall and actually has big muscles. Kathy gives the girls lots of attention. The girls want to see the discus, so Kathy takes them over to the field area so they can get a look. Kathy lets each of them hold the discus. One of the girls mentions, wow, that's really heavy. It's anybody's guess whether Kathy is talking to a future discus thrower or track star. With all the victories Kathy experienced today, talking with the younger girls is the high point of her afternoon. One of the girls asks Kathy, "Can you throw the discus again so we can watch?" Kathy tells her, "I can. But we'll first have to ask the field judge if it's okay." Kathy and the girls walk over to a field judge, and she asks if she can throw the discus for the girls. The field judge tells them, "Sure. It looks like the field is clear. If it looks like someone is going to step out into the red zone, I'll stop you." They head over to the discus pad, and the girls, along with their parents, stand off to the side along with the field judge. The field judge gives Kathy the go-ahead, so she steps onto the discus pad, with the discus in hand. Kathy goes into the wind-up, and into the spin, releasing the discus along with her primal scream. The girls all exclaim, "Wow," as they get to see the discus girl throw the discus from up close. One of the girls exclaims, "Wow. That is so awesome. Watching up close is a whole lot different from watching from the bleachers." The kids are in awe seeing Kathy throw the discus 150 feet. Kathy, as it seems, now has a new fan club. But the younger girls have to go home with their parents, and Kathy has to join up with the team. Before they leave, the girls tell Kathy that they will be watching for her during the next meet. Kathy walks out to the field to retrieve her discus. As the bleachers empty out, Kathy notices Mr. Crumb being helped by Mr. Brian as he attempts to navigate the bleachers on his broken leg. There's no doubt that Mr. Crumb saw Kathy's discus throw while she was talking with the younger girls today. There's also no doubt that Mr. Crumb saw Kathy's second place throw during the meet. Thus far, Kathy has not been suspect in Mr. Crumb's investigation into who threw the discus at him. Mr. Crumb undoubtedly just revised his list. As Kathy retrieves her discus, the team heads to the lockers. On the way, Paula decides the tribe is going out to get pizza for a big celebration. No one objects, but after catching up with the tribe, Kathy learns of the plans. Kathy asks, "Hey, how come you guys made plans without me?" Paula remarks, "Like you're going to object." Kathy smiles and replies, "Well, I heard Mr. Crumb is getting pizza after the meet." Paula, shocked at what she just heard, replies, "No. That can't be. You can't be serious." Kathy laughs and exclaims, "Had you going?" Paula starts chasing Kathy, who quickly tosses the discus to Eddie. The team, including Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday, stops to watch, as everyone wonders what Paula is going to do when she finally catches Kathy. The chase goes on long enough for Mitchell to run a mile. It appears that Kathy lets Paula catch her, probably because she wants her pizza. Paula tags Kathy, and they both walk back to the group. Mark asks, "What was that all about?" Kathy tells Mark, "I let her win." Paula responds, "No, you didn't." Kathy replies, "Oh yes, I did." Paula replies, "In your dreams." The exchange goes on between Kathy and Paula for a minute or so, with neither yielding to the other. Paula then tells Mark, who is waiting for his answer, "When we were kids, we used to play tag together. We would chase each other down forever." Kathy adds, "Everyone else was too slow, so me and Paula played our own game of tag when everyone else was playing theirs. The other kids were way too easy to catch." Mr. Fraser, hearing Kathy and Paula's explanation of what just happened, gains a little more insight into why the two girls are so fast. After they get dressed, they all head out to the pizzeria. They invite Akinmola to go with them, who mentions he had a pizza once. Since he is new to the school, he is glad to go out to eat with the team and make some new friends. Shortly after they leave, Mark asks, "How come you girls are walking?" Kathy answers, telling Mark, "I think I'm walking this year, only because I can. I even walked to school today." Eddie, Mark, and Paula understand Kathy's comment, which makes no sense to anyone else. Akinmola asks, how would they get there if they didn't walk? Mark explains to Akinmola, sometimes we carry them. It's a good workout. Bobby B puts Erika on his shoulders and tells Akinmola, like this, for a whole mile. Akinmola exclaims, no wonder you guys are so strong and fast. Carrying the girls is only a drop in the bucket compared to the rest of their workouts, but Akinmola is beginning to get the picture. Akinmola is now 100% sure that his father found the best track team around for him. They arrive at the pizzeria and take their usual seat. Since they are a large group, Joe comes over and takes their order. Most everyone gets pizza. Bobby B, the lone holdout, orders his usual, telling Joe, I'll have spaghetti with extra sauce and three breasts. Erika, who has no shortage of comebacks for Bobby B's standard order, mentions, that's one and a half women. Tell me, who is the other half? I've got to know. Kathy reassures Erika, when he orders four breasts, that's when you begin to worry. Everyone, including Joe, laughs at Erika's comment. During dinner, a familiar face just happens to show up and gets in line to place an order. Eddie tells Kathy, I think your old friend Mahoney is back, but I'm not sure. Kathy replies, oh really? He is? Eddie is not 100% convinced that it is Mahoney who walked in. The guy who walked in is 5 feet, 9 inches, and weighs about 130 pounds. If it is Mahoney, he is extremely emaciated. Kathy turns around and sees that it actually is Mahoney in line. Paula remarks, yeah, that's him. He's about the build he was in 9th grade before he started working out. Don't worry about him, though. Kathy mentions, I guess they let him out of the sanitarium. Kathy then asks, do sanitariums have a spring break? Braden tells Kathy, it looks like you don't need us to take care of him anymore. Kathy, who now towers over Mahoney and is obviously much stronger than he is, no longer fears him in the least. After placing his order, Mahoney sees Eddie and the tribe all sitting together. Mahoney walks over, and the tribe's adrenaline levels at the table go up to pre-race levels. Mahoney says to Kathy, hey, I just wanted to say that I'm sorry for pushing you over that day. Everyone is in shock hearing what Mahoney has to say to Kathy. Kathy stands up, turns toward Mahoney, telling him, don't worry about it. I forgive you. Mahoney is quite fearful, seeing Kathy's appearance now compared with when she was a sophomore. The group, seeing Kathy standing next to Mahoney, is quite confident that Mahoney won't be giving her any problems in the future. Mahoney says to everyone, it's nice to see you all again, and walks away. Everyone wonders what happened to Mahoney. It is the first time anyone has ever seen him this personable. Mahoney goes to pick up his order and leaves. Perhaps a year in the sanitarium did Mahoney some good. After dinner, everyone steps outside and talks for quite a while longer. The group explains to Erika, Amber, and Akinmola the story behind Mahoney and what a problem he was a few years ago. Everyone then walks home, going in different directions. Kathy walks down the street confidently, not only because Eddie is with her, but because she now knows Mahoney poses less of a threat to her than a dead frog. The following day, in school, the word gets around that the track team had shut out Centerville High School, their opponent. The football team is happy to hear this too. Earlier this year, the football team creamed Centerville, with the final score being 56-3. Centerville is the school's rival in every sport, especially football. The word also gets around that Kathy took second place in the discus. This prompts the school newspaper to feature an article about Kathy. Also, on Friday, some other news and wisdom are distributed around the school. Mr. Bryan, who was at yesterday's meet with Mr. Crum, has finally figured out why his son, Jimmy, is not qualified to run track. Chucky has been bailed out of jail and is back in school. He is now the laughing stock of the class. And Mr. Crumb, hobbling around on crutches, might have an inkling that he is not quite the big shot he purports to be. After school, at track practice, the photographer for the school newspaper, Lynn Burson, gets a few pictures of Kathy for the featured article. Lynn is also one of the photographers for the yearbook. She wants to get pictures of Kathy throwing the discus for the yearbook during the next meet. It doesn't stop there. Lynn gets quite a few photographs of the team running drills and the field athletes hurling their implements through the air. The best photograph of all, however, is Erica sitting on Bobby B's lap in the Cushman. That photograph is bound to make it into the yearbook. Kathy's new fan club, comprising quite a few elementary and middle school girls, is getting larger. They are at every meet to watch the discus girl do her thing. The fan club's presence at every meet forces Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday to permanently assign Kathy to the discus. After every meet, they all meet Kathy at the discus pad, where she throws the discus once or twice so they can watch from up close. This has become Kathy's favorite part of each track meet. This gives Kathy a lot of reassurance that she someday wants to be a gym teacher. The team practices hard over the next few weeks. Winning every meet this season, the team is stronger than it's ever been. The turnout for every meet packs the bleachers. Mr. Crumb and Mr. O'Brien have yet to attend a meet since the first meet of the season, but they are not missed at all.